Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back for another week on the M Squared TechCast. It's panic in Detroit, chaos
panic
in Detroit. There is a truck fire on 696 near our studio that has that major artery in Detroit closed, but everybody made it in. We're all here. We're on time, reasonably close. So we're ready to go with another fun-filled show for you with a whole bunch of interesting tech news, and we're going to start out with one of the most interesting guys I know, longtime automotive expert David Cole. He is chairman of Auto Harvest and ran the Center for Automotive Research for quite a number of years, and he's here to talk to us about the latest automotive technology trends. David, welcome.
Great to be with you, and the reason I've been around a long time is I'm old.
Okay.
Well, that's good, right?
I was going to call you seasoned.
Well,
but that's
it's better than the alternative, let me tell you.
Yeah, true. All right, so you gave us a list of topics to talk about here. I thought there's two that are kind of related that are near and dear to my heart in my day job at Lawrence Tech. Somebody dinged the bell, the shameless plug bell. Where'd it go?
It's over here.
Oh, okay, here we go. So, but it's the it was talent, and the importance of hands-on schooling and skills. So talk about that a little bit as regards the auto
industry. Well, it is a big deal. It's kind of interesting. I had a meeting from 11 to 12 today with Roger Curtis, and Roger heads up the Department of Talent and Economic Development. It's a relatively new position, and I can tell you that the state is very focused on this, particularly hands-on types of activities. And for some reason over the years, too many people view hands-on as punching a computer key. And that's part of the game, but it's only part of the game. And what we need to get people to understand is that if you don't have hands-on experience, and I don't care whether you're a skilled tradesman, an engineer, or whatever, you really don't understand how the world works. And what we're seeing today is an exodus of the boomers from manufacturing and from a lot of other fields. And we do not have an adequate pipeline of people with the hands-on type of experience. In fact, in Michigan, the number one shortage at this point are skilled trades and technicians. And these are not low-paying jobs. These are very high-paying jobs. Number two happens to be engineers that have electromechanical skills. But this is a big deal, and it could really hurt our ability to be a world-class manufacturing center if we don't have people that are really close to the hands-on skills.
So what kind of training is required for these skilled trade jobs that we're experiencing a shortage of?
Yeah, almost. The community college, for example, is almost essential. And I'll tell a quick story. If you look at three or four school dropouts 40 years ago, they walk into an auto plant, they meet a foreman. The foreman says, just do this repetitively 8 hours a day and life will be good. Well, you move forward from there. The foreman's gone. It's a self-directed work team. Technology has flowed into those positions, and now they're retiring 40 years later, and they're replaced by essentially one person. That's a measure of the productivity improvements that we are seeing. And if we don't have that one person with the understanding of the basic technology, and I don't care what you're talking about, you know, welding or die making, doesn't make any difference. If you don't have those basic, that basic skill and knowledge coming into the operation, you're not going to get that job. And we don't have those people today. And I don't care whether, you know, you're talking about plumbers or what have you, electricians, we have to make sure people understand the importance of hands-on types of skills. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, there are schools like Lawrence Tech and others that are doing the job, but we are not doing enough of the job to get the young people, the number of young people that are really needed. In fact, in manufacturing across the country, in the next few years, we will be short more than 2 million appropriately educated people. I mean, that's engineers, technicians, finance people. But hands-on is a big deal, and we've got to convince people that that's important. You know, a four-year college degree is nice if it's employable. I have a former student that called me a month or two ago. His son is graduating with a mechanical engineering degree from the University of Michigan, essentially had an offer from everybody he talked to. He has a girlfriend who's graduating with a political science degree, and she can't get an offer from anybody for anything.
I can relate to that.
Well, you could. Yeah, you have to know somebody who's working in a political campaign or a political office,
well,
and then there has to be an opening.
Usually it's a pre-law degree is what it is. You have to go to law school.
Yeah, I know at Lawrence Tech we just graduated about 950 people, and of the people we graduated, 89-point-something% of them already had either jobs or were accepted into grad school, but that's because of the kind of programs we run. So, you know,
that's exactly right. And we need to really make sure that people understand the importance of that kind of an education.
I didn't coin this phrase. I wish I could remember who did, but people used to think of manufacturing as what was called the three D's, dirty, dangerous, and dull. But it's really, it's not like that anymore. I mean, how do we get that message out?
Improved. Our productivity has improved dramatically. And just give you an idea of the shift in jobs. At one point, General Motors had nearly 500,000 UAW hourly workers. Today it's about 50,000. But those 50,000 have to be very highly educated because of the technology that they're dealing with. So the world has changed, but one of the things that is still very important are the skilled hands-on type of jobs. And one of the challenges is, when I went to grade school and high school, I had wood shop, metal shop, machine shop, drafting. Worked on a farm every summer. It was very hands-on, and it was a tremendous benefit. Shop classes are rare in schools today for a couple of reasons. One, they're expensive. The facility is expensive. Two, parents, many educators don't want their kids to be involved in that kind of thing. And number three, the instructors can earn three times as much money using that skill someplace else.
All very interesting points.
Yep. Yeah, I know that some of the older schools that my kids both went through the Dearborn Public Schools, they still had a wood shop and a rudimentary machine shop in
home
the school.
Home economics class.
But it was a matter of finding the instructors, as you said. You know, I mean, they couldn't find
very
anybody. Yeah. I mean, they had people come in once in a while from Ford that showed, you know, basic machine skills. But other than that, I don't, you know, they had a heck of a time finding anybody full time.
That's right. Remember the football coach at Michigan, Bo Schembechler, he brought in all these great kids, recruits, and there was a big sign in the locker room. It's the team, the team, the team. If you have a team, a football team with 11 quarterbacks on the field, you're going to lose every game. You've got to have quarterbacks and fullbacks and guards, tackles, ends. And what we have lost the sense of is the importance of all of those skills that are part of the team. I don't care whether you're talking about football, baseball, or manufacturing. It's a team sport, and we are short now some of the key players on this team.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that sign's still there. I was just in that locker room for the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, and team is still there.
Oh, that's right. They toured that, didn't they?
They did.
That had to be fun.
Hey, let's shift gears here, quite literally, to autonomous vehicles, driverless cars. What's going on in that area?
Well, there's a lot of talk and there's a lot happening. And I think one of the challenges that we have is can we achieve some of the goals that people have set out? I mean, you're looking at really five levels of autonomy. Level one being what we've always had. Level five is you're asleep in the back seat on a trip. And that's probably quite a ways away. But the technology is moving very fast. You have a lot of companies, both the tech companies, auto companies, talking about it all the time. And it's interesting that in a survey that I saw, it was really an evaluation of who's ahead in this game. The two companies that were viewed as being the furthest in the head in terms of autonomous vehicles were Ford and General Motors. And when you hear, you know, the Teslas and the Googles and all of the tech companies, what most people don't understand is that while they have great technology, it only has value if it's embedded in something like a car or a truck. So it's going to be an interesting game. Certainly the technology is moving very fast, but I think the sleep in the backseat trip is probably quite a few years away.
Yeah, I was at the International Ground Vehicle Competition last Monday out at Oakland University, and there's a lot of really interesting technology there being developed by college students, but it's still kind of hard to figure out how to tell a car to follow a path when it's basically white spray paint on grass. That was the path that they were following. And there were some cars some vehicles that did it pretty well and some vehicles that just sort of got confused and stopped, and, you know.
Well, it's tough. You know, one of the problems, for example, that Google has had with their cars, they have a very rigid set of rules. They're driving along the road. Here's a traffic light. The light turns orange. Bang, the car stops. And one of the problems they had is the cars following them. The driver said, I can make that light. Mm. And they crashed into the rear of the Google car.
Yeah, okay.
So this mix between people and technology is going to be with us for a long time. And another thing is making choices. You know, for example, there's a deer in front of me, hit the deer, don't swerve. If it's a child on a bike, obviously that's a different story. But how do you make the right decision very quickly? And, of course, one of the most significant issues as we move into more and more of this autonomy is the legal liability. And if it makes a mistake, there's no question that we can save an enormous number of lives and have a huge impact on safety. But if we make a mistake, who is liable? And if it's the company that's liable, they're going to be very reluctant to really move into that technology until they resolve those kinds of issues.
We've only got less than a minute left, Dave. We can't cover any more topics, but if folks want to reach out to you, tap into all that expertise you have, how should they do that?
Well, they can always send me an email, dave@daveecole.com. There's two E's in the title there. Happy to talk about any number of different things, but we live in very interesting times. And of course, with a new president and all of the uncertainty associated with things that relate to the auto industry, my current speech title is Auto Future, Fast, Furious, and Uncertain.
Indeed it is.
All right. Thanks very much, Dave Cole. He is the
great
chairman.
Great to be with you guys.
Yeah, he's the chairman of Auto Harvest and a longtime automotive industry expert. We'll be right back with our next guest in just a moment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with our next segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we want to introduce a new kid on the block here, but not new to Comcast business, Jeffrey Marston, who is the Vice President of Business Services for the Heartland, if I understand that right. That's Michigan, Indiana, and parts of Kentucky.
That's correct.
Okay, cool. So I was asking you earlier, it's the first time I've met you. You've been with Comcast for a long time, but I think you're new to this particular post, or did I get that wrong?
Yeah, that's correct. So I actually started with Comcast as a BA or an account executive, and I've held a lot of different roles. And I was in the Heartland region when I started and moved out to the Northeast to work for the division out there on the residential side. And now I'm back to Michigan in this new role over business services.
Are you from Boston? I heard a Boston accent.
I'm from Maine. I grew
Maine,
up in Maine.
Okay. I heard that long A, so yeah. You gave it away.
Yeah.
So
not the flat Midwestern E.
No, yeah. Not that. You know.
Okay.
So, all right, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the successes that Comcast has had. I know video surveillance is really big, and I know I see your commercials everywhere where you're talking about home surveillance, you're talking about business surveillance. Let's talk a little bit about that. What's going on with that?
Sure. So the first that you mentioned was our residential product, our Xfinity Home, which launched, and we now have since launched a product, Smart Office, which is a business application where customers can record video and access it from their mobile devices and store it securely.
That's kind of cool. Actually, I was watching those commercials, and I thought, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's taken off quickly. There's a lot of appetite for it. And I'll also say that we're partnered with the city of Detroit for the Project Greenlight. So this is a variation of that where our video surveillance actually goes back to the police station so that they can monitor that activity as well.
Now, you're familiar with that, but I'll bet a whole lot of other folks out there aren't. So describe Project Greenlight.
Sure. So Project Greenlight, like I said, was an initiative by the city. It literally is a green light on top of a video camera to kind of let people know that that area is being surveilled. And what it's done is reduced crime by more than 50% in these areas where these cameras are. So there's a lot of demand, and by any measure, I think it's been a success, which prompted the city to expand this into other areas, and we're seeing it grow very quickly. But again, one of the other benefits of it is we've seen more traffic into businesses because obviously if patrons know that there's a camera there, that it's safer to go there. So it really has been a real hit.
And I know Clinton Township, although that's not in your coverage area, has just adopted an ordinance that crime-prone businesses or potential crime-prone businesses have to have video surveillance as well. So it's really taken off.
Yeah, I'd say so. We're getting a lot of requests for this now, and it started in Detroit. So that's really been the incubator for this idea. And you know, with its success, we're getting requests from a lot of different municipalities and city governments about it.
Yeah, this isn't just video surveillance either. This is HD. This is really high-quality video,
yeah,
right?
720p,
so you can actually tell who's doing the bad stuff.
Yeah, we actually have one that is so crisp that it'll read a license plate. Huh. So where people illegally dump, this is another application for this so that we can actually capture license plates and they'll have that data as well.
So what is the Comcast footprint in Metro Detroit? I know Clinton Township's not part of yours, but what else? Is this about everything else?
Yeah, I'd say we cover just about all of Southeast Michigan, in a large part of Michigan.
I think Novi and Livonia are the only ones you don't have.
We're building into those. So we've started what we consider these builds into areas where we don't have infrastructure. And those are two areas that we've started that.
Okay. All right, so tell me a little bit about the really high speed stuff. I know everybody touts 1 gig access these days for residential and small business. So where do you have 1 gig service now?
So we have 1 gig service in all of Detroit. Hmm. So we launched, and like you said, gig is kind of a big buzzword, particularly among the technology folks, and we deployed our DOCSIS 3.1 technology in Detroit, which allows us to deliver gig speeds over our existing infrastructure. So that means we're not digging up streets and we're not pulling molding off and we're able to run ubiquitously over our existing infrastructure. So technically Detroit now is a giga city, not just small pockets or areas we can deliver that service to any customer.
And give an example or two of what you can do with that kind of service, like downloading a movie or whatever, so people understand it better.
Yeah, so it's, instead of minutes, it's seconds. So, and we also see a lot of businesses, run bigger applications or different software. So where normally enterprise companies like Comcast would only have access to those types of platforms, then now these smaller businesses can run the same type of programs, you know, SAP or Oracle or, some of those that require a lot of bandwidth.
And so having the big bandwidth, you can handle big data. Nice segue there. I'm trying to lead you into the third one there, So.
And that's, I guess, where I'm kind of going with this, too. You know, before this 3.1 technology, there was a big gap between, what small businesses and larger enterprises could do. So they were really at a disadvantage. And now, through some of those programs and even our own cloud technology and a lot of these other programs that we offer, these small businesses can track customer patterns and collect data. Even people on selling things on eBay can have access to that data now and really track their customers and all of that information.
But video still remains the big thing. I know Netflix, I've seen studies that in the evenings, it's about a third of the internet is people downloading Netflix. I know looking at social media trends, because before we went into video, I looked at that real carefully, and they're saying by 2018, 2019, 80% of what moves on social media will be video. So having the big bandwidth really helps, right?
Yeah, I would say that. So our bandwidth demands go up between 40 and 50%. Every year. So just to give you some kind of idea, and I think if you sit in your living room and see all the connected devices, you can get an idea of just what's happened year over year over year, so that the demands continue to grow for the reasons that you mentioned, and we're keeping up with it. I mean, so when we also turned up Indiana with the same DOCSIS network, and we'll continue to do that, but it still doesn't prevent us from going fiber deep into neighborhoods and building to proactively into areas where we don't have infrastructure like Novi and Livonia.
What about Kentucky? I mean, the folks down there want big bandwidth or not? I have an image of Kentucky, but it's not big bandwidth. So.
Well, we certainly love Kentucky. They do not have the 3.1 yet, but that's something that's on the slate as well. And our goal is to have our entire footprint across the country DOCSIS 3.1 capable.
Okay. So what are your customers looking for in a technology provider, and what do you think they should be looking for?
I think they should be looking for a company that is reliable, you know, that can be supportive. So I think in the case of Comcast, that you know, we own the network. We're a tier one provider. I think we can provide that reliability. We have a lot of redundancy. I think it's, you know, as a business owner, I would be asking those questions that related to what I just mentioned. You know, what can you provide? Are you scalable? You know, what kind of programs can
scalability
you...
Scalability is really important because you can't predict what's going to happen, how much demand you're going to need, right?
So. Well, yeah, and think about what I just said. You know, the demands and all these different things, you know, as people grow their businesses, more devices on their network, more applications, moving things into the cloud. So I think it's, you know, scalability is a big one.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, so we talked about your business investment. That's an interesting question here. What, if any, are the two most surprising things your customers say about Comcast Business? I mean, what surprises them?
I think that they're often surprised. Well, let me back up. I think most people still think of us as the cable company or the TV company, and when
Jim Carrey comes to the door and all that
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, right? The yeah. cable guy. Yeah, so it's when they really see how scalable our network is and that we're really an industry leader in business services and that we have all the cloud services and hosted phone systems and Wi-Fi in all those bandwidth levels, I think it is a surprise to them that really how much we can help their business. I think they all have that eureka moment when they say, oh, really, you mean I could do that, or I could provide Wi-Fi, or I could put, you know, a TV in my waiting room or things like that. It's really just a comprehensive solution in that we can grow with their business.
Well, the big companies obviously have CIOs or CTOs or somebody that really understands this stuff. It's really your target audience is the smaller to medium businesses where they may not have that expertise, right?
For sure. I think that's really what we cater to. We want to provide a solution to you know, any business. I mean, whether it be a very small mom and pop all the way up to large enterprises, and we have a solution for all of those.
Okay.
And it's all mobile, right? I mean, you guys are getting more and more into the mobile business as well?
We are. We're going to be launching our SD-WAN, which will allow businesses, even if they're not on our network, to connect securely through a VPN, and that's just one example of some of the cloud services that we offer.
Yeah, I know. An awful lot of places I go now, I look for networks and I see Xfinity Wi-Fi in more and more places, some fairly obscure places too. So you must have something near there.
Yeah, we'll go anywhere. Yeah, I mean, we want to help everybody, like I said.
I guess that would be another point is your Wi-Fi access. I've lost track of how many. I know there's a lot of them.
So I've lost track too. I mean, we have put Wi-Fi canopies in different cities. There's, you know, they're certainly in Detroit as well. And we continue to put them out there. So it's you know, something that we'll continue to do.
What else is? Oh, go ahead, Matt.
All right, I'm going to ask the Matt Roush question here.
Are you hiring?
I always, yeah. Are you hiring? And if so, for what kind of skill sets?
So really, across the board. I mean, we're always hiring. We're always looking for talent. We were just voted one of the top 10 places to work by LinkedIn, which was fantastic, as well as some other accolades that we've received from the different from Michigan and other states. But really, you know, sales were hiring. Technicians were always hiring. Really, I mean, if you were to go to Comcast Jobs, you could see a lot of different opportunities on there. And they're everywhere across the country.
What's the toughest one to find, the technicians, the skilled people like that?
They're certainly hard. I have a lot of respect for the technicians because they go through the attics in the heat and they, you know, are in the crawl spaces. So I think it's, you know, they do a lot and they certainly care about the customer. Sales is another one, too, where, you know, there's a lot of demands. It's fiercely competitive out there. And, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
Sure.
Hey, I want to mention, well, we got him here, too. As most people know, we're partnered with the Internet Advisor on WJR, and you're going to be on that show this Saturday, along with the Clinton Township Supervisor and someone. We're not waiting to see who's coming in from Project Greenlight from the police department. But most of that hour is going to be devoted to video, just what's going on with video. You'll enjoy. You're calling in, though. I don't think you're coming in, right?
No, I'll be calling in. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Foster Brown and the crew will walk you through that. Gary Baker is now with Captain Gary Baker. He's down in Florida, so he's skippering a boat, but he Skypes in for the show, so you got to love the new world, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be in Detroit to talk about Detroit.
Can work from anywhere, which is the good part and the bad part,
absolutely,
all at the same time. So if people want more information about Comcast Business, where do they go on the web?
ComcastBusiness.com.
That's fairly straightforward.
And if they want to reach you, do you offer up in a way to do that or not?
You could probably reach me through you.
Through me? Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks very much. Jeff Marston, Comcast Vice President of Business Services. Thanks for appearing on the show today.
You can also get me through LinkedIn by searching for Jeff Marston.
Actually, right. That's how I found you the first time.
That's right.
Okay. Well, he's a reporter. He tracks people down, you know. So, okay.
The old days, but anyway, that's the old days. So,
all right. Well, thanks very much for appearing. We'll be right back with our next segment in just a moment. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, where we are proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast. This is one of my favorites because we get to just sit back and watch somebody else do the interview. This is fun.
But not quite like when Kathleen Norton Schock takes over the segment. But,
no, because when she takes over the segment.
She really takes over the segment. Then I had to go out and get a beer and sit down in the green room. And,
we love you, Kathleen.
Yeah, we just like to give you a hard time. But not Timber. Timber's... What do we say?
A longtime friend of the show.
Yes, a longtime friend of the show.
Yep.
And she's
with Inforum. And tell me again the specific program. It's the
Engage program.
Engage program, right, that deals with basically building a better woman entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Our masterclass actually We work with emerging second stage women entrepreneurs, which means we're going to help them during the time they go through our class, our cohort session, that we're going to help get them ready to either do $1 million in revenue or get them poised for venture or angel capital.
I wish you could help me do $1 million of revenue. That'd solve a lot of problems, I'll tell you. So
absolutely. That's why we do it. It's important.
So, Alexa, I assume you're making $1 million in revenue now, right?
No, not yet. Hopefully we will be. Okay.
She just started this year's cohort. So right. We're not quite through there yet.
So, yeah, Timber, take it away and tell us all about...
I stepped on your introduction. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, tell us all about Snuglet and Alexa.
No worries. So I would like to welcome my guest, colleague, and friend Alexa Jones today. So her company is Therabee Medical. It's a really very, very cool product she's got called Snuglet. And she and actually a couple of co-founders developed this program when they were in college at Michigan State. So I'm going to let her kind of tell us a little bit about the company. Welcome. First, welcome.
Thank you.
So glad you're here. It was a trying traffic day for us. But so Snuglet, Therabee Medical. Tell us about your company. How did it come about? What's your product?
Sure. So Therabee Medical is the name of our startup company, and our product that we're producing is called Snuglet, and it's a wearable treatment for infant jaundice that's both wearable and portable, and it makes maternal infant bonding and breastfeeding much easier to accomplish while the infant is actually being treated. So it's a medical device that's used both in hospitals but also can be taken home. If the baby is able to go home. And we've been developing this product for a few years now, and we have not yet launched, but we're still in process of finishing up our development and gaining FDA approval so we can launch as a medical device sometime next year.
Cool.
Excellent. 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 So it sounds like a great device that it can be that portable. So what has the treatment for jaundice been in the past?
So jaundice is treated with a technology called phototherapy, and it's the direct exposure of a certain wavelength of blue light, and that's the known treatment, and that's what's used across the board. So our product takes phototherapy and uses it in a different way. It's a wearable tech instead of an overhead light or an incubator or what's called a billy blanket, which is just an underneath pad that the baby would lay on. So our device is still a phototherapy device, but it's a new innovative way of using phototherapy technology that's better for everyone involved. So it's better for the baby because they're swaddled. It's better for the mom and the family because you can hold the baby and breastfeeding isn't impacted. And also it's better for the nursing staff and everyone at the hospital because it actually covers both sides of the baby's body. So they no longer have to use two devices at a time to try to get the most skin coverage.
Wow. So how did you come up with the idea? Where'd the idea come from?
So I think you mentioned at the beginning that this started at Michigan State. A few years back, we were an engineering group for a capstone project, so our last year of college.
And I was actually at that event.
Oh,
I
really?
Actually stopped by and talked to you guys. Design Day. I'm not sure if I talked to you, but
okay.
I was there. I remember being impressed by that.
Oh, well, good to know. Yeah, so those are our roots. We started developing a similar product for developing markets, and none of us had a child that had jaundice, so we had to start off with doing a ton of research and customer discovery, as we called it. So we started off with interviewing nurses and pediatricians at hospitals throughout Michigan. And actually, the first group of nurses we talked to had said to us, this is a really great idea you guys have, but we wish you would develop it for us here in the U.S. And so that's where the initial idea of creating a U.S.-based product came from. And we've come a long way since then, since our roots at Michigan State, and we've been a startup company ever since and still working on the development and FDA approval.
What's the process for FDA approval?
So our product is a Class 2 device, which means that we do not need clinical trials, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and a lot less expensive,
yes.
Too. I mean, the clinical trials, I've covered a lot of drug development mm-hmm. companies.
Yeah.
8 or 10 years and tens of millions of dollars.
It's over 100 now for the typical product.
So we feel really fortunate that we don't fall into that category, but we do still have some approval processes to go through and some testing to prove safety and to prove clinical viability and so on. So we're still going through those right now, but we feel fortunate that we don't have to go through a long clinical trial process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when you anticipate having all of the requirements that you need to get
Move it to production? We're hoping early next year. That's our timeline for right now.
Do you have an investor yet, like angel investor? Or?
Yeah, so we actually have two great partners currently that were our earliest investors, and both of them are out of the East Lansing area. One of them is called Quantum Medical, and it's an early stage fund focused on medical devices or healthcare related early stage startups. The second is Spartan Innovations, which is through the Michigan State University Foundation.
Yeah, I was just up there last week. They may be coming on board as we may be working with them to shoot videos of their entrepreneurs. So we were in discussions. I was in discussions with them last week.
Oh, fantastic.
Got a parking ticket, too. But
that's not surprising for East Lansing.
Yes.
Not at all.
Yep, and we're actually looking now to expand our investor portfolio for our seed round.
Great.
How much are you talking seed round? What do you think it'll take?
We're looking for a $500,000 seed round currently.
Wow. So, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm asking your questions. You're going to use that for?
And the $500,000 seed round will be used to complete product development and all the appropriate testing that I mentioned for FDA submission, and also to get us through our initial inventory for our launch.
So I saw the prototype, I remember, from Design Day, and it sort of looked like a string of Christmas tree lights sewn into a blanket, but they were very specific kind of lights, right? It's ultraviolet
So the prototype you saw, actually, we were working with fiber optics back then. We were trying to make a portable fiber optic device, which we found to be very challenging. And we actually have pivoted since then to an LED powered device, which works much better for the design that we're looking for. And it's just a visible light, blue,
blue wavelength.
So it's not UV, it's not harmful, it's not. A lot of people think that it's similar to tanning bed lights, which everyone knows are harmful
not
for the
good.
Skin.
Yeah.
So it's not.
bed lights are harmful?
So it's not, so it's not anything like that. It's just visible light that's filtered out to a specific wavelength, and that wavelength is what's caused the chemical breakdown in the blood.
Well, the other beauty of LED is very low power consumption,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
I changed all my light bulbs in my house to LED, and they're a little expensive on the upside, but, boy, it's like takes $2 worth of electricity during the course of the year to power it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Great technology. So you told us that you started actually in developing markets with this product. So what's the plan is your planned launch to launch in the U.S. first? Mm-hmm. And then those other markets?
Yeah, so our plan is to first launch in the U.S., and there's actually two sides of our market. There's the hospital side, and then there's also the side through DMEs, or durable medical equipment suppliers. So that is the home care supplier side of the market. So once we have success and traction with both of those U.S.-based markets, then we hope to launch in other countries. Perhaps Europe or some South American countries or Mexico.
So do you have intellectual property that you are guarding here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So we're working on our patent portfolio still.
Great.
Through development.
Okay. Yes.
That's an expensive process as well, right?
Yes, but we've found some great partners over on the west side of the state that we're working with. So they've been great for us to work with in developing that IP portfolio, which is so important to us and also to our investors.
So how many people are involved in this project at this point?
We have a great team. We have about 4 or 5 people that are involved in some capacity. I'm the full-time employee right now and the co-founder and also CEO. And we have a bunch of other individuals that help either with finance or with the medical side of things or sales and marketing. So.
Now, you may have said it, and I wasn't listening closely, but do you have a medical background then? Or?
No, I actually have an engineering background.
Oh, okay.
So I graduated from Michigan State in biosystems engineering with a specialty in biomedical, and that's why we started at Michigan State with this project, because it was a biomedical engineering type of project back then.
Yeah, I know some of the ideas for the Design Day teams are suggested by professors. Others are found by students on your own. How did you happen to find this one?
So the developing country idea was given to us through our program, but we spun off from that for the U.S. market after doing research.
Cool.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the program mm-hmm. within Forum that you're in right now. Mm-hmm. So I already described it as a peer-to-peer founders forum, and I'm just curious how it's, so far in these first few months that we've been together, how's it been helping you with your business?
Well, I am a first-time founder and startup CEO, so it's great to have a group of peers to bounce ideas off of and get feedback as people who are outside of your company. And, you know, they're not in the day-to-day, but they can still offer you advice that may be great, valuable advice from someone that's been there but maybe isn't quite as biased as people who are involved day-to-day with the company itself.
Well, and there's a lot of stuff you'll discover you don't know that you think you do.
Or things that you don't know that you don't know.
Yes, right, yes.
Or things that you know are wrong.
But you do them anyway, right? You know, so... I could write a book on what not to do as an entrepreneur because I've probably done it. So we got about 2 minutes left.
Perfect. So what's the next immediate steps for Therapy Medical and Snuglet?
Yeah, so we're focusing now on fundraising our seed round, and that'll really kickstart the end part of our development. And just really building awareness of our product. We've been to about 8 hospitals in Michigan, and those have been our development partners so far. So we've worked with about 200 different nurses through prototyping and designing, but we hope to expand that to different areas of the state or of the Midwest or really any part of the country to involve different hospital systems or pediatric wards of hospital systems that have an interest in Snuglet. And maybe partnering with us for a pilot study or becoming one of our first customers.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Super exciting stuff. So,
and at what point in your business plan do you expect to make $1 million in revenue?
So hopefully that'll come soon after our launch if things go as planned with the several Michigan hospitals that we've been working with for several years now. So,
okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Which is great. Thank you very much, Alexa, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Therapy
Medical. Great chatting with you.
All right. I want to thank Temper Shave and Forum and Alexa Jones, CEO of Therapy Medical. That's an East Lansing startup working to launch its first product. It is a blanket that will help treat infant jaundice. So thanks very much and congratulations on your success so far. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M2 TechCast. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. We are up to episode 80, what now? We're in our mid-80s?
Some days it feels like it.
Okay.
I feel like I'm in my mid-80s, yes.
Yeah,
especially
right.
Today,
yeah.
Chaos in Detroit.
Yes, so. 696 is closed down.
It still is. I just checked my phone.
There is massive red. Don't go out there, folks. It's worse than a blizzard, I'm telling you right now.
God, stand still.
Yep.
I think we have a caller. Do we?
Yeah.
All right. The Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. Is this the executive director, John Freeman?
Yes, it is.
Good. Okay. Well, you are here to talk to us about the association's activities and also about your conference coming up, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So tell us when and where and what's going to be there at the conference coming up in Traverse City.
Well, the conference and fair takes place on the weekend of June 23rd, 24th, and 25th, with 23rd being a Friday, the 24th being a Saturday, and the 25th is a Sunday. The energy conference takes place on the Saturday, the 24th, and then the energy fair takes place on Sunday, the 25th. Friday afternoon from 4 to 8 o'clock, we're having a panel session on the future of electric mobility. In other words, electric cars and that whole trend that's going to continue to develop. So that's kind of like an add-on event. But the core of the weekend is the energy conference on Saturday and the energy fair on Sunday.
All right. So what do you see as the what will be discussed at the mobility event on Friday?
Well, the key thing about the mobility event is that we're seeing the increase in demand for electric cars, as well as electric car charging infrastructure. And this is a growing trend because more and more people want to buy cars that actually run on electricity that's generated by renewable energy versus, the standard, internal combustion engine, which runs on oil, gasoline. And so we're going to be talking about some of the trends, about some of the current models, about what the future holds, and about how we're going to install the infrastructure for charging electric cars as well. But that's just one panel. The event on Saturday, which is our conference, is we're going to be talking about the whole kind of the state of the renewable energy world. And we want to particularly focus on Michigan because Michigan has been growing quite dramatically in terms of adopting renewable energy. But we still have some challenges ahead of us. So we have a series of workshops where we want to identify some of the hurdles that we have to get on top of in order to accelerate the adoption of renewable energy in Michigan. And then on Sunday, which is our energy fair, this is when members of the public can come and mix and talk with renewable energy companies that install renewable energy systems, and they can learn, from talking with the companies, how easy it is. They can learn how to finance it and what is what we call the payback period. How long do you have to own your system before you paid for it? How long will it be until you would get essentially free electricity from, mostly solar, but possibly geothermal, possibly wind?
That's like 10 or 12 years or something like that, right?
In terms of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy is,
Right.
It depends. The cost, let's focus on solar. The cost of solar has come down dramatically in the last 2 or 3 years. We have the extension of the 30% investment tax credit at the federal level. And so, yes, we think, for the most part, that people can pay off their system within no more than 10 years. But the thing is that as electrical utility rates keep going up 2, 3, 4% almost every year, then the payback period is actually going to continue to be shorter because the cost of people remaining on, utility electricity is going to increase, which means for those that have made the choice to go to the renewable energy route, they're actually going to be saving money more quickly as the utility rates keep increasing.
So how many people are you expecting for the conference and the fair?
We're hoping for about 200 people for each day. The tickets are about $25 per person, but If you want to bring your wife and your kids, it's only $25 for the entire family. We're actually having a series of activities for youngsters on Saturday with the Hands-On Museum out of Ann Arbor is coming up to Traverse City, and they're going to be putting on some events for children. And so parents could drop off their kids. They could participate in the conference. You know, there'll be more activities on Sunday for kids. They can circulate amongst the vendors. So we're trying to make this a family event. But to answer your question, we're hoping for 200 people apiece, but, you know, more the merrier.
Now, I know this energy fair has moved around the state quite a bit. It's been in different locations. It was in Nekama, I believe.
Yeah, I went to a couple that were at the Manistee County Fairgrounds.
Right.
That was fun.
Came down to Novi one time.
Was swallowed up by Cobo Hall once.
Yeah. And then in Lansing, or actually not Lansing, Mason a couple of times. So are you still kind of searching for that perfect location, or is Traverse City it?
Or are you intentionally moving it around? Sort of involved the whole state.
The Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association historically has held one major energy fair a year, and we have moved it around. But we actually are changing our model because our goal is to try and educate as many people as possible about the economic benefits of installing a renewable energy system and how those benefits translates into a cleaner environment. So we're actually moving to more of a regional energy fair approach because we want to make it easy for members of the public to go to a fair. They don't have to drive as far, and that way it's more convenient for themselves and their lifestyle, or if they have children. So we're having an energy fair in Traverse City, which we hope to attract people from, the northern lower peninsula and, frankly, also from the upper peninsula. And then we're having an energy fair on September 9th in Ferndale, Michigan,
which is a
suburb just north of Detroit. So folks in southeast Michigan that might not have the ability to drive to Traverse City, they can just stay local and come to Ferndale. In the future, we're hoping to have, three or four of these regional fairs every year. So cover somebody in the western part of the state, Grand Rapids, maybe even go to the UP, to go to Marquette, go to southwest Michigan, Benton Harbor, St. Joseph area, maybe Kalamazoo. Because, again, our goal is we want to accelerate the rate that people adopt renewable energy. And so we have to engage in a very serious educational campaign. Because, anytime there's a new technology that's being introduced in our country, it always takes a while for people to be comfortable with it. So we have to engage in an educational process. And frankly, when there's a serious amount of money involved, when you invest in a renewable energy system, we want people to fully understand what they're getting involved with. And so that's another reason why we're promoting education. So again, we want to make it easy. We want to have a regional fair approach. And so that's why we're trying to have several fairs in different parts of the state every year.
I know there was some talk last year about revisiting Michigan's net metering rules that would have made it a lot tougher for the paybacks on rooftop solar. Where are we on that issue right now?
Well, what happened was a new law was enacted last December, and basically it kept net metering in as it currently is, until approximately April of 2019. Between now and then, the Public Service Commission is engaging in a year-long process to look at whether it's appropriate to enact a renewable energy distributive energy tariff. And that literally is the language which is in this bill, in the bill that became law. So beginning last April until April of 2018, the Public Service Commission is holding a series of hearings to try and figure out what the real cost is to the grid and to the investor-owned utilities for people to adopt a solar system and to remain connected to the grid. But even if they do decide to levy a tariff, which is not clear it's going to happen, because so far we're realizing that the cost to the, the grid is very minimal. For people that get solar. But even if a tariff is levied, again, which is not certain, it won't take effect until April of 2019. And even then, there will be a 10-year grandfather clause that's a part of the new law That means that if you install a solar system prior to the enactment of the new tariff, that you will have 10 years where you won't have to pay that tariff. And the reason why the 10 years is what we talked about a few minutes ago, is that currently, on average, it takes about 10 years to pay off your system. You know, but again, you know, there is fairly clear certainty that there would not be much of a solar tariff at all. And one of the panels we'll be discussing at the Energy Conference on June 24th is with the Public Service Commission. They will be talking about this process, and members who attend that workshop will be able to share with Julie Baldwin, who is the lead staffer for the Public Service Commission, who will be on the panel to discuss this solar, this renewable distributive energy tariff.
Okay. I promised the previous guest we'd give her about 2 minutes at the end to talk about a program, but let me just say that you're new. Where did you come from? What's your background? I know you're just assumed your duties, but I'm not sure what the date was when you assumed your duties.
Well, first of all, again, my name is John Freeman. I'm the new executive director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. Prior to becoming the executive director last December, I've been on the board of directors of the organization for about 3 years. I've had a history of working in different progressive organizations, and I also served 6 years as a state representative representing the wonderful communities of Royal Oak, Hazel Park, and Madison Heights.
Wow.
And so my job is to, you know, promote, you know, renewable energy in Michigan and to enable the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, which is the oldest trade association representing, you know, renewable energy companies and even individual members that their advocates for renewable energy can become members. So, again, I've been working on this for a while, and I want to make sure you listeners understand that they want to learn more about the Energy Conference and the fair. There's a great website they can go to, which is www.micleanenergyconference.org. There they can see the agenda, they can buy tickets, they can look at what hotels are available, and they can see who our sponsors are for this event. So just to answer your question, you know, I've had a background in working on different policy matters. I've worked in the legislature to try and enact policy laws. And that's why I'm really excited to be the executive director, because I know how important it is not only to educate the people about renewable energy, but also the importance of establishing a policy framework that supports the expansion of renewable energy in Michigan.
All right. Thanks very much, John Freeman, Executive Director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. And the website of the organization is still glrea.org, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, glrea.org is for the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. You can also learn about the conference from that association, buy tickets and all that. But there's also the other website, www.micleanenergyconference.org. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on your program, and you're doing a wonderful service. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. All right. Let's turn back real quick before we leave for the day to Tim Boucher of InForum. Tell us about what's going on at InForum this summer. I know you've got a couple events you wanted to talk about. A
couple events coming up. Actually, tomorrow evening we'll be at Tech Town Detroit. It's part of our Engage program also. It's a role model and investor series that we do. Tomorrow we're going to be having a panel discussion with three Detroit entrepreneurs who've been on the show, Tatiana Grant, Amanda Lawan, and Gwen Jameer. So we're going to have a good time at Tech Town tomorrow night. Social Sushi, who's also been on with me, is actually going to be catering tomorrow night. So if you get a chance, get on the website, come on down.
And as long as 696 is open, we can make it back.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And then on the 21st of June, we'll be at Bamboo Detroit having what our organization calls Informed Connections. It's a really heavy networking, light on program event. So it's a lot of fun. We'll be there on the 21st.
And give that website address one more time.
www.InForumMichigan.com.
That's InForum Michigan.com. Thanks very much to all of our guests today. John Freeman of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, Comcast Vice President of Business Services Jeff Marston, Tim Boucher of InForum, and Alexa Jones, CEO of Therapy Medical, and auto expert David Cole. Fun show today, Mike.
Very busy, yes.
Yes, indeed. And a little bit crazy, but then a little bit crazy is our thing. So.
Yeah. Well, live radio, no matter whether it's internet radio or terrestrial, it's still crazy.
Yeah,
you know? It's
still fun. So we'll talk to you next week.
This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.